Well, good morning, TNC family, on this second Sunday in February, where today here I want to talk with you about the best question for your situation, no matter your situation. In fact, this is perhaps the key question for anyone's situation, and it's a question that God asks Moses in Exodus chapter 4. The setting there is Moses is in the Midian desert tending sheep, and he notices a bush that is on fire. And from the burning bush, the voice of God speaks, which leads to a conversation between Moses and God about the situation going on with Israel in slavery in Egypt, and about how God is going to come into that bad situation and through Moses going to do something about it. God says, Moses, go to Egypt, speak on my behalf, tell them I sent you, and tell the Pharaoh it's time to free Israel from its slavery. Which leads to chapter 4 and verse 1. Moses answered, what if I go and tell them you sent me, but they do not believe me or listen to me? Verse 2, then the Lord said to Moses, what is that in your hand? That's right, God answers a question with a question. What is that in your hand? And that is what might be, and it's what I want to propose to you today, is the most important question you'll ever be asked, no matter your situation. What is that in your hand? What is that in your hand? And for Moses says, it's a shepherd's staff. And God says, okay, throw it on the ground. Verse 3, so Moses threw it on the ground and it became a snake and he ran from it, which is exactly what I would do. But then the Lord says, verse 4, stop, reach out your hand and pick the snake up by the tail. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake and it turned back into a staff in his hand. And now I'll just point out that in the scriptures, God doesn't do miracles just to show off. Further, God doesn't ask Moses, what is that in your hand? Because God's confused and doesn't recognize that that's a staff. No, God is asking a question he already knows the answer to, which means he's asking the question for Moses' benefit, not his. What's in your hand? And it turns out what's in his hand represents three things about Moses' life. First, his identity. He's a shepherd, and the staff is a symbol of his occupation, his identity as a shepherd. Number two, the staff is a symbol of his income. All of his assets are tied up in the sheep. In those days, there are no bank accounts, 401ks, collector's items with appreciating value. All of his income is tied up in the flocks. And third, the staff is a symbol of his influence. Because what do you do with a shepherd's staff? You move the sheep from point A to point B, by hook or by crook. You prod them and pull them. And through this episode, God tells Moses, if you trust me with what's in your hand, I will make it come alive. I will do things with it you never thought possible. Now, I want to read verse 1 and 2 again and ask you to listen to Moses' question followed by God's question. Chapter 4, verse 1, Moses answered, What if they don't listen? What if they don't believe me? Then the Lord said to him, What is in your hand? What if? What is? If is. If is. And if you know your scriptures, you know that this is a pattern in the scriptures. For example, Matthew chapter 14, the disciples say, if only we had more loaves and fishes, we could feed 5,000 folks. But Jesus asks, what do we already have on hand? Oh, 5 loaves and 2 fish? That'll do. Or a man says, Matthew 17, if only I had more faith. Jesus says, well, how much do you already have on hand? What's already in you? Man says, hardly anything. Jesus says, that's enough if you place it in me. Or 1 Kings chapter 17, there's a widow from Zarephath living in a town in the middle of a drought and a famine, and Elijah comes to her and asks for food and water, and she says, if only I had more, I'd share. And Elijah, the prophet of God, says, well, what do you already have on hand? What's in your hand? And the widow says, well, I'm down to my last bit of flour and olive oil. In fact, one last meal for myself and my son, and then we're going to die. And Elijah says, that little bit in the hands of God is enough to last you for a few years, which it does. And that's the pattern. We ask, what if? And God asks, what is? Now, let me be clear about the kind of what if that I'm talking about today. I'm not talking about the kind of what if that's the healthy version of it, linked to having hopes and dreams and optimism and faith. What if we trusted God more? What if we started an exercise program or a financial savings plan? What if we got involved in that charitable organization? This is not the kind of what if I'm talking about. Today I'm talking about the kind of what if that keeps us up at night, losing sleep, filled with worry. The what if I try and fail? What if I speak up and then stumble over my words? What if I don't live up to people's expectations of me? What if things don't get better? What if I don't get that needed money, joy, peace, self-control? What if I don't have what it takes? This is the what if that's a weapon of negative forces to keep us from moving forward with the things of good and the things of God. And it's into these what ifs that God comes and answers you and me, what is already in your hand? And of course, there are many ways to answer this question, but I want to suggest to you now three things that you already have in your situation all the time, no matter what your situation is. Three things. Here's number one. What is that in your hand? Number one, what you have is some things that you can control. Almost always in your situation, there are actions that are easy and within your control and that will have enormous influence in how your situation plays out. Here's a few of them. You decide when to go to bed, how many pillows and covers to use, when to wake up. You decide how to fix your coffee, down to grains of sugar and drops of cream. And you likely drive to and from work in a car you bought. Set the temperature and volume how you want. Listen to music or podcasts that you choose. And beyond that, you eat food throughout the day that you want. You watch what you want. Exercise as much as you want. Text, call, read, use your words as you want. And we talked about that 2 weeks ago. Your words have the power to bring life or death into your situation. And all of these things are not trivial arenas of your life that you have control over. They matter. They matter enormously. And of course, there's a lot more than just these things you have control over. But my point is, when you encounter situations and things outside of your control, look to what is within your control. What do you already have in your hand? David Gergen writes about this in his wonderful 2022 publication, Hearts Touched with Fire. Gergen is a former Navy officer, then a White House advisor to four presidents of both parties, currently a professor at Harvard University. And in the book, he tells the story of James Stockdale, a POW in the Vietnam War, who before his imprisonment spent 20 years as an American fighter pilot. He was a specialist in national security. And then during Vietnam, he was captured and he was treated to unimaginable brutality and hardships. He spent 8 years in the Hanoi Hilton, where he was tortured regularly, put in leg irons and locked into solitary confinement. Stockdale was the highest ranking officer among the POWs. And Gergen goes on to talk about how Stockdale survived during these 8 years. How? Well, Stockdale says he kept two files in his mind. One file for the things that were up to him and within his control, and another file for those that were not up to him and thus beyond his power. And then Gergen, after telling the story, spends the rest of the chapter advising us, the readers, to do the same thing. In whatever situation we find ourselves, he says, that he has seen this across cultures and countries, in politics and academia, and in the life of his own family and friends. He says, if you pay lots of attention, in your situation to events beyond your power, you will ultimately have a life of fear and guilt and anxiety. But if you pay attention to the things within your control and then act on those things within your control, he says you will develop confidence, momentum, traction, progress, perseverance, hope, results. TNC is almost the single most important practice in your life, differentiating between what we can change and what we can't, what we have influence over and what we do not. Now, the recovery community, of course, summarizes this in their serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can and the wisdom to know the difference. What is that in your hand? Answer, the ability to control some things. Which leads to number two. What is that in your hand? Number two, what you have is the ability to see the good in people and in your situation. And let's start again with the scriptures, because I think this is how Jesus chooses his 12 apostles. He did not see Peter, the hot-headed, ill-tempered, angry, unreliable fisherman. No, he saw the good in Peter, the determined, focused, loyal rock. And he didn't see John, the young, immature kid without any life experience. He saw a beloved, kind, gentle, patient man who would be faithful to him when all else faded away. This is how Jesus saw Zacchaeus and Mary and Martha and the woman at the well and on it. Reminds me actually of what Warren Bennis writes in his classic book on becoming a leader, about the junior executive at IBM who was involved in a risky venture for the company and ended up losing IBM $10 million as a result of the bad risk. And so the junior executive is called into the office of Tom Watson Sr. Watson Sr. was the founder of IBM and he led it for 40 years. And this junior executive is overwhelmed with guilt and fear. And he just walks into Watson's office and he blurts out, "I know you've called me in for my resignation. Here it is. I resign." Watson says, "You must be joking. I just spent $10 million educating you. I can't afford your resignation." Watson found the good. This is something we need more than ever in our situations, TNC. Actually, in our public discourse. I remember during my days in college, studying history and being involved in political discourse and so on. And back then, some of you will remember this, any good Republican could name a handful of Democrats they liked and vice versa, that they thought were good people, even though they did not agree with everything they said. And I remember learning about Republican President Ronald Reagan and Democratic Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill, notorious for liking each other and being friends and engaging in meaningful dialogue and not saying anything bad about the other one in public. Now, just stop and think about that. It was not that long ago that somebody who was essentially a Democrat could name a large number of Republicans for whom he or she had great respect and regard for. Not a perfect person, not a person for whom they agreed with all the time, but a person they respected and they could find the good in. But today, instead of finding the good, folks just want to compare themselves to someone they think is worse, as if the criteria is the person I like is less bad than the person you like. That's just not the way it should be. TNC, in almost every situation, there is good we can find. Good in that person, that family member, that friend, that work colleague, that classmate. And even in a dark situation, to quote the psalmist, even though you may walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you can fear no evil, for God is with you. And so there's good to be seen in that because God is with you. What is that in your situation, in your hand? There is the ability to find good and to see good. Which leads to number three. What is that in your hand? Number three, what you have is the possibility of relentlessness. To control what you can control and to find the good over and over and over and over again. Now, this is not going to be easy, but it is just that simple. Naaman, dip into the river over and over and over and over. Israel, march around the city of Jericho over and over and over and over. Jesus says, forgive 70 times 7. And I think of the testimony and the work ethic of athletes and musicians and influencers. Steph Curry, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Oprah Winfrey, Maya Angelou, Condoleezza Rice, Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Brian Greene, relentless people. I think, too, of the writing of Malcolm Gladwell in his book Outliers, The Story of Success, where he sets out to discover how talented people become world-class performers. Are they just born with this huge innate talent, and do they just effortlessly float to the top? No. His research shows that the story is actually very different from that. In particular, Gladwell argues for the validity of what he calls a 10,000-hour rule. You may have heard of this. And he draws on a mountain of academic work, and then points out several examples, including Mozart, who famously started writing music when he was 6, and his early works were not very good, and the ones that were good, we've come to discover, were written by his father or uncle. But for 10 years, he kept on composing, age 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, so that by the time of his first masterpiece, he had been practicing composition for 10,000 hours. Similarly, the Beatles were not overnight sensations. They performed live in Hamburg, usually all-nighters in clubs, over 1,200 times between 1960 and 1964. And that, the over and over and over and over, is what shaped their talent. 10,000 hours is the magic number of greatness, Gladwell concludes. Now, how do you reach 10,000 hours? Well, in 10 years, 1,000 hours a year, 19 hours a week, 2¾ hours every day. In the words of one of my favorite singers, Harry Connick Jr., at the end of a song where he's playing with this great New Orleans jazz group, and they're in this amazing riff of improvisation, and they all want to keep on going, and on the CD you can hear in the background, he or a member of his band shout out, "One more again! One more again! One more time! Again! Again! Again!" Or in the words of the author of Hebrews in the New Testament, chapter 6 and verse 11, "Show diligence to the very end, so that what you hope for might be fully realized." What is in your hand? There's something you can control, and there's the ability to find the good, and there's the ability to be relentless about those things. Which leads us to the final move in our situation, because we are called to take what's in our hand, just like Moses, and to lay it down at the feet of Jesus, to surrender it to a God of love and wisdom. Now, partly surrender means, you do these three things before you see the results. That's what it means to demonstrate faith. Also, partly what it means is that you don't do it alone. You need a loving community to join you in the surrender and support and strength of these things, because we together are the hands and the feet of Jesus, the Apostle Paul reminds us. And so what I want to do now is end with a prayer of surrender, a prayer of laying these things down. So will you pray with me now? God, in this moment, we just surrender. We give to you our situations and our worries and our fears. Will you take them and will you give us back your presence and your wisdom and your peace? And TNC, that's my prayer, that the Lord bless you and keep you. Make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen.